took this opportunity to thank the organizers of this wonderful workshop. And I'm the one, and I guess the only one, to using high tech today, or maybe for this week. And so it's an experiment, I tell you. This is the first time for me to use it as well. I hope the experiment will go, you know, nicely anyway. And so reason I'm using this, of course, I don't want to get my hands dirty. You know, we mathematicians always use a blackboard. So, and also, of course, another reason I can just hide my mistake easily. So if we write down on the blackboard, you know, I cannot hide. And of course, most importantly, I can always finish my talk on time. So I can finish transparency in 10 seconds. So, I don't need to worry about this one. So also, I want to say my talk, it's maybe relatively simple because I look at the previous talks. At least nobody talked some elementary stuff for the nonlinear wave, what I talked about. So I decided to give some very, very elementary facts. But I want to basically try to promote the technique from the Einstein universe. It's some kind of the compactification of the Minkowski space. I drew a little bit of picture over there. I will refer there many, many times. So to show you why this method actually is very, very useful. Sometimes give you more insights into some problems. Is it working or not? That's okay. The nonlinear wave, that's what write down in the most general form. Of course, I cannot solve all the problems like that. So, of course, you have initial data and initial velocity. For simplicity, I always assume my initial data to be C0 infinity. And so, of course, the usual question we always ask over here, so it's do we have a global existence? Do we have a blow up? And also, do we have a scattering? Do we have a scattering? So the Mark actually yesterday talked about this. And maybe everything else is so trivial, so let me say a few words about this, the scattering. So scattering over here, basically I want my solution, whether my solution, solution to nonlinear equation will be look like the solution to the free equation, that means corresponding n equal to 0. Okay. So physical reason, if you talk to any particle physicist, they say, of course, it should be. Okay. So that means the nonlinear wave solution should be look like the solution to the free equation at t tends to positive or negative infinity. Reason is you should not have any particle interaction when t is negative infinity. If it's not true, so maybe they will say you mathematicians are crazy. Okay, and don't believe the physicist anyway. So you know that's physicist. You know we always joke. You know maybe half of the papers are wrong. You know maybe another quarter is not interesting either. So. But at least our result is rigorous. So the goal of this talk, I try to simplify some existing argument, and I will give some more insight into these problems, okay, using the technique. So the tools, as I said, I will use the Einstein universe, and I will explain a little bit later if we don't know what it is. And I also want to say the method basically was used to establish existence theory, especially global existence theory. But I want to focus my attention to see how we can use it to show some blow-up results and some scattering, existence of scattering. So before I get into the Einstein universe, let me quickly say what we usually do. And of course, almost everybody here is expert on this. So the basic fact for the nonlinear wave, one is using called speed of the unit speed of propagation. Another is basically decay of the free solutions. So if then we have some intuition. Right? If this look at the nonlinear time look like u to the l, then this means the first derivative to the m. So if this one, if the power add together is big. So because this is a decay, if a power is big, that means this is small. So f and g are small, so your solution may exist globally. So if L plus M is bigger than 1, this is 1 look like L, okay? So that is relatively small, my solution may blow up. So that means, you know, this perturbation is too big, so maybe the solution may blow up. But of course, also if your L M bigger than 1, anything, if your initial data is big, so you may have a blow up. So of course this intuition is true, at least when we give talks in conferences, you know, intuition is always true. And when we do the research is another story, of course. Actually it is true, so let me tell you a little bit. I don't want to be, cannot be so complete anyway because I tried to get this transparency yesterday. So NU, if you look at NU just like U to the pure power, so we know the blow up for large initial data, actually the first work I think is started from Keller in 1957. So then some, I just listed some names. Then finally anyway, proved for big initial data, then we always have a blow up. For the small initial data, of course, the problem is more interesting and the difficulty. So the Fritz Jung, of course, is his first the paper in the 1979, the first breakthrough is for n equal to 3. So he proved for n bigger than 1 plus square root of 2 solution globally exist for small initial data. For if L is small enough, it's more than this, actually every non-trivial solution blows up. It blows up. So of course, naturally, you have a equal to that, equal to 1 plus root 2. So these are actually the conjecture by Strauss in 1981. So he conjectured the critical power dividing the global existence and the blow up. Okay? So this is the power, okay? Horrible looking power, but it's conformed to solving this kind of the quadratic equations. Okay? So this power actually, I don't have time to show you, actually it's come out naturally, just a play around with the unit propagation velocity and solving some of the integral inequalities. Okay? So because we have many talks talking about the shooting equation, we know this power looks strange, but also appeared on the scattering theory for the nonlinear shooting equation for the scattering. So of course, there are some people, of course, related to water. It's proved some conjecture. Actually, it turns out to the blow up, it's a little bit easier because you just try to construct some functional. But for the global existence, there's some result for n equal to 2 and 3, but for general n, that's a recent work started 1996 by the Linneville and the Sogi. So of course, using that called the subless, the Seelhard type estimate, the previous speaker talked about it. And they solved basically the global existence for small initial data. For the quadrilinear case, actually, it's, I guess so far it's basically studied these two kind of the quadrilinear, of course, except the equation with null condition I'm going to talk about later. First result, I think, is by Kahneman and Pons in 1983. He proved for m bigger than or equal to some power, m bigger than or equal to power, this is the number, so that you have a global existence. But it turns out this is not critical. Okay, it's not critical because Fritz Jung proved in 84, actually for n equal to 3, m equal to 2, and n equal to 2, m equal to 3, actually have a blow up. So that's a lead to the conjecture actually for the, at least for the quadrilinear case, the critical power should be that, okay? So you can see this number actually is bigger than this number anyway, so. There are many results in this direction too. For n equal to 2 and 3, it's all proved. For the existing theory, only have a partial result for the n bigger than equal to 3. Okay. Okay. So because I said I will use this picture to show you the blow up. So so we all know how to prove the blow up, right? So blow up basically first of all you just try to construct some functional related to the function u, then after using the differential equation, try to establish some of the differential inequalities. Then next step, of course, is solving this the differential inequality to prove the existence. The first step, I say the second step, let me say first second step, we are all very good at solving ODEs at least, so we know that's a little bit easier if we can find one. So that's the tricky one is the first one. I said it involves intelligence and luck. So intelligence, we all have a little bit. Luck, that's, I guess, another story we have to pray, I guess. And most of the time, we don't have. And so let me, the idea is to prove the blow up. So I try to basically constructed the the functional, remember. I tried to construct the functional to establish some of the blow up result. So to construct the IT I talked about in the previous transparency, let me introduce a technique called the conformal transformation. So conformal transformation, this is the Minkowski space here, right? It's R1 cross Rn. I'm using the Minkowski time called a small t. This is supposed to be Einstein universe. It's a part of the Einstein universe. Maybe I should have put over there in the board over there. It's Sn, okay, it's Sn, sorry, here. Sn cross R. That's usually called the Einstein universe. So there's a conformal map. There's a map from here to here. But it's only part of the Einstein universe. Okay, it's only part of the Einstein universe. Okay, the image is in this cone. Image in this cone. Here, rho, I use the rho here. Rho is just the distance, just the standard distance on the sphere Sn to the north pole, to the north pole. And so actually this is the image, okay? So there's such a map, Of course, you know, we did the, basically compactified the space and the time together, remember, okay? Compactified the space and the time together. So this map actually is a conformal. So that means the pullback of the metric. Sorry, maybe I didn't talk about this metric here. So of course on the Minkowski space we have this standard, the Minkowski metric. And on the Einstein universe, this is a metric on the Einstein universe. This of course is called Einstein time, t. This ds is the standard distance on the Sn. Okay, on the Sn. So this one, c, actually is a conformal. So that means the pullback of the metric, right, is just given by this conformal factor. Actually, you can calculate the conformal factor is this one. Okay, is this one. This is in the Minkowski coordinate. Minkowski coordinate. So from the conformal geometry, I look at it as, because you can view this one, the box in Minkowski space, as an Laplacian under this metric. Okay, under this metric. So if we have a conformal transformation, so we know the conformal Laplacian is a conformally covariant, right? So that's what I write down over here explicitly. So that means if you relate your function u in this case is in Minkowski space, your v is in the Einstein universe, this c is a conformal transformation. This is a compose, v and c, sorry, this is too big here, but this is a composition function. So of course u related to v, but of course must multiply by this conformal factor. Right? So this is the relation here. Okay, so the basically boxing u, that's not this one, is you can calculate this one is basically box v. Of course it must be conformal Laplacian, so that means this one should be the derivative t, this is an Laplacian Bechtolmi operator, and of course this one comes from the curvature, right? Because conformal Laplacian must have a curvature term there. Okay, so that's how this comes from. So very good. So what we did is basically we introduced some transformation, transformed the equation, this equation, to still basically same equation. Okay, same equation. But my domain is compact now. Okay, my domain is compact. Let me see. Because many of you maybe didn't see this one, so I decided to put the one transparency over there. So this conformal transformation actually is there actually since 1963. And so our idea is basically try to identify the H2, that's Hermitian matrix, and the unitary matrix, and the basically U2, okay? So what I had it that time is for n equal to 3, of course, only, for n equal to 3. So you just look at the any M0, any point M0, you can write down X0, which is my time T, X1, X2, X3 is a space variable, you just write down this as a Hermitian matrix, right? I do the Hermitian matrix, of course, because A is Hermitian, so this one, of course, is unitary. You just form this matrix, B is unitary. And the unitary matrix, of course, you can write down B as, this is SU2. SU2 means the determinant equal to 1. Then multiply by some phase transition, E to the IT. So that's it, okay? So it means, but remember, SU2, you can identify with S3. So, but then, this is for n equal to 3. So when you write it down, S3 in terms of coordinate, so you can generalize this one to n. So means, you know, so that's actually I have the formula for this, okay? So over here. So important thing to remember is actually your conformal factor in Einstein universe is actually very simple, just the cosine t plus cosine rho. Okay, cosine t plus cosine rho. Before I go any further, let me tell you some easy consequences if you look at in this picture. So for example, so we all know that in order to solve the nonlinear equation, we have to first of all study the linear equation, right? Study linear equation. So for the linear equation, if the box U equal to zero, of course, because by conformal covariance, your V will be what? Zero as well, right? This should be tilde, okay? I had the trouble to form the unit, the net X, sorry about this. And the V, of course, has a, if my U has a smooth initial data, of course, V has a smooth initial data. So this equation of the perfect, the wave equation on Einstein universe, we can solve for V, right? We can solve for V, smooth V. Okay, so but you can read this one because remember U is equal to some conformal factor times V, right? Times V. So you can easily get the decay of the U, right? Because V, of course, is bounded smooth, right? It's a finite time. So this one that you can get the decay. Okay, you can get a decay estimate. Okay, from this conformal factor. And also you can get a mixed norm estimate. This will be very, very useful for the scattering operator. So you can basically using this decay, so you can get some of the mixed norm estimate. And also, you can read the actual decay is faster away from the Nikon. That's a well-known fact, right? Because Nikon, we know the decays look like a t to the minus n minus 1 over 2. That actually the away from Nikon is look like a t to the n minus 1. Okay, t to the n minus 1. So, by the way, this estimate of the decay and the mixed norm estimate usually is obtained by some restrictions in oscillatory integrals. We saw many of them here today, over here. And also some of the, other machinery. So there's another new conservation law here, if we look at in the Einstein universe, which is actually we call it Einstein energy. Okay, Einstein energy here. Actually, it is a constant. Okay, it is a constant. And this fact, for some reason, it's not very well used in the Minkowski picture. Okay, and so we know that some of the conserved quantity is always very, very useful when we do the estimate. Okay, so this one, by the way, it's bigger than Minkowski norm. It's bigger than Minkowski norm, okay? So once you have that, so actually you can, for example, how to prove the global existence. Global existence in Minkowski space, of course, becomes a local existence problem, right? Because you only need to prove the existence in this in the from zero to pi instead of the from zero to infinity. So that's why. So for example, with a small initial data, right, if the initial data is small, so you expect your solution will at least from what? From zero to pi, right? So any nonlinear problem, so we know under the definiteness size of the existence depending on the definite size of the initial data. Okay, so that's roughly why you can see that. And the compactification also, I say, it may be very, very useful for the computational purpose, and actually maybe can shed some light involved, especially because super critical power, because here nobody talking about the numerical, maybe I will skip that part, okay. And it's useful because when you do the numerical computation, you have Sn here. You have Sn. It's a compact, nice compact manifold. So, and when you do the numerical simulation, you don't have a problem. In the Rn case, you have to definitely, no matter what you do, right, you have to chop into the finite domain. So then you will have a trouble. But in this case, you have a nice Sn. You don't have a trouble. So numerical simulation definitely can be done. Okay, can be done. No, that's right now I just, even though this one here, right? No, I just working on the S, S, R cross S.
Right, but at spatial infinity, the metric is only continuous, not differentiable.
No, the metric is smooth here. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I will get into that part, okay. So that's a, for example, for small exponent, then we already know, remember the small exponent, we have what? Remember, at the beginning I said, for small x like this one, if the exponent is small, we may have what? A blow up, right? Blow up. So what's the reason for it? What's the reason for it? So if we look at this equation, so remember this is my substitution, right? Transformation. If we look at the Einstein universe, that's what he ended up. Okay? So this one gave you that. So this one, u to the power l give you v to the l. Of course, then this power come from this one, this l to the n come from this one, n plus 3 over 2, remember from the conformal covariance. So if you look at that, if this power less than 0, right? If this power less than 0, so means if l less than equal to that, your transformed equation has a singularity. Okay? So that's the reason. If this is smooth, then you don't have too much trouble. But because L is small, so you have a singularity. Okay? You have a singularity. Okay? So, of course, in this case, if we can find a reasonable solution for T less than pi, if we have such answer, so we solve the global existence for M0. So we all know something must be wrong, right? We cannot solve, right? Because we already know for small component, my solution is impossible, right? My solution is impossible. So that means this singularity definitely will be there and say you don't have nice solution, okay? So I stated the earlier result, but I will give very simple argument in the later, actually just 2.9. You can see, you know, the blow up easily, okay? So for the big component, why big component you have a global existence, for example, right? For the big component, of course, I still look at that one, right? I still look at this power. Do the substitution, but this power is the same, this is the same. But if, for example, if L bigger than that, if L bigger than this number, it's just by the way, this number is corresponding to the conformal covariance equation, right? For n equal to 3 case, that's a 3, okay? So the equation can be extended to Einstein universe with continuous coefficient, right? So you just extend that, okay? You can extend that. So that's the reason for small initial data, and the big component, you can solve the equation, okay, t less than equal to pi. So these are some details I don't want to get into, of course, you just work in some suitable space, the bounded Lipschitz and so on, so you can get to the global existence, okay. I want to make one more remark on this Einstein universe to relation to the null condition. So it's a well-known fact over here, for n equal to 3, if you have a nonlinear function look like some quadratic of the first derivatives plus higher order terms. So usually for n equal to 3, if we want to have a global existence, you have to have some called the null condition. Okay, you have to call the null condition. It's given by the Kahneman. Actually, null condition R1 cross R3, if you do my computation, Einstein universe, it exactly means that the reduced equation can be smoothly extended to Einstein universe. So it means your singularity disappear on this piece here, okay? So on the cone here. So it means you can extend the function, basically try to extend the function onto the Einstein universe, okay? I'm sure you know that as a student in Korea about 20 years ago, Sergio gave a talk, you know, gave a lecture on this the null condition. I tell you, I don't know whether I want to go through that again. Okay, so it's so complicated. And so the next I want to show you, okay, the how to use this picture to show the blow up result. Okay, blow up result. Okay, so here's a picture here, right? This is my Einstein universe. Here's my Einstein universe. So remember that my image of the Minkowski space is this in this right, triangle, basically, right? But if you have, this is a support, okay, this is the initial support. The trouble is, if we have F and G support, because by the unit propagation velocity, so your blow up may appear outside of what? Outside of the Minkowski space. You may have a blow up in Einstein universe, right? In Einstein universe here, but maybe the singularity over here, the circle over here. So that means even if you proved the global, the blow up in Einstein universe, you actually didn't prove any blow up in Minkowski space. Okay, that's the trouble, right? So you cannot, that's what I say, conformal compactification cannot be used directly. Okay, but so here's the idea. Actually, it's a very natural idea. So let me explain this picture a little bit. So if my F and G initial data has a compact support, okay, so actually support at zero, that means north pole, okay. If my support at north pole, by finite propagation velocity, right, we should, then my support should be here. It should be on this triangle. Right? If I can prove my blow up, is before t equal to pi over 2, right? You just look at the intersection here. It's a t equal to pi over 2. If I can prove my blow up before pi over 2, then actually the blow up must appear in the Minkowski space. Okay? So if I can prove this one, similarly, if I, of course, maybe my support F and G is not at North Pole, but a little bit, you know, very, very small over here. Then if I can prove my blow up time before pi over 4, and also automatically what? Automatically, blow up must appear in the Minkowski space. Okay? So as long as I can prove my blow up before pi over 4, my initial support is relatively small, so I get to the blow up result. But for the problems, I don't know, you know, why this is the initial data is actually small. But no problem, I can have another one. That's over here. I have another very natural conformal transformation here, just by dilation, right? Just the space-time dilation. Okay, space-time dilation. By the way, this is only works for the nonlinear wave, and so doesn't work for the Schrödinger equation we talked about over here. So it's just by the natural dilation argument, right? So dilation of, under this dilation argument, of course, the F and the G, you basically shrink your support F G by a factor R. So of course, you can always shrink the support over here. Okay. So then I just do the natural transformation. First, I do the dilation. Then I do the what? I do the conformal transformation. I consider this family. I put, of course, this one, if r equals 1, everything is just as before. So if r is different from 1, so I put the r to the power s here, of course, as you all know. So that's by dilation argument. So I have to put the equation in nice form. So, and so then let's look how it works. I just give you an example. So let's look at this equation. Okay, box U, for example, this is a semi-linear equation. I put this factor over here just for simplicity. Actually, we can get rid of it later, you will see, okay, to prove the blow up. So then you just calculate, right, by, as I said, using this transformation, you just calculate this. So it, of course, becomes that one in the Einstein universe, right, So, of course, you have to calculate the initial data. That's crucial here, the initial data. Because you have R, this is the right power, as you all know. So then I put the initial data. I also calculate the initial velocity. Maybe some people will wonder why this one gets one more power, because what? Because when you take the derivative, you have a dilation. Okay, so this is one more power. So this is my initial data. Look, so this one, I definitely want to prove this. I want to prove this one blew up before t equal to pi over 4, okay, before pi over 4. Okay, let me state an easy theorem because I didn't want to do too complicated estimate over here. So I'm sure, you know, if I give you an idea, you can all figure it out. So look at this equation, right? So, and I say if L between 1 and this number, you will see later why this is easy, let's call it, okay? So what I want to give you the idea is if L is small, right? If L is small, so definitely any F and G bigger than zero, my non-trivial, my solution will always blow up in finite time, okay? Blow up in finite time. And also I will tell you, as I said, it's only two lines, but for any fixed L, right? If the initial data compact supported and relatively big, big enough, then your solution automatically blow up. So that means big initial data automatically blows up, okay? Okay, let's see how it goes. In this case, that's why I call it easy, because I just consider it very simple, functional, called h of t. I just the integral of that one, just integral on Sn, okay, integral on Sn. So when you do this, you just integral equations, remember this H double derivative from of course double derivative T. Then this one is from the curvature term. Of course, the Laplacian term went away because Epsilon is a compact manifold without boundary, so that went away. On the right hand side is this, right? Right hand is this. But because this one is a compact, of course, we can use the Minkowski inequality, right? This is just H to the L, right? Just some constant. So what I do, of course, I put the H double derivative. I put half of that over here. I put half of this over here. I put another half over here. I put one H here. This one, I move this one to this right hand side. So what you can see easily, right? Because if this one, this term, I call it J here, right? H L minus 0, 0 minus that. If this is bigger than 0, what we can find is H double derivative bigger than this one. So we know that one is always what? Blow up. It's very easy solve the very easy ODE, right? So actually we know the lifespan of H. If this is bigger than 0, actually can be, you know, it's determined by the initial data, right? It's determined by the how big is the initial data, okay? So the next thing I just, in order to prove the blow up, I just try to prove this one is bigger than 0, okay? I just try to prove this is bigger than 0. Of course, I have to prove this one is big. H0 must be big, remember, right? Because I want to the blow up, is the blow up time is small. Blow up time is small. L, of course, is bigger than 1, so I need to prove the H0 is big. Okay, so it's just a calculation, basically. H0, look at H0. By the definition, right? That's my initial data. I have all power here. Okay. Maybe some of you will say, oh, it's 10 to the infinity automatically, right? That's must wait a little bit because my the transformation here. Okay, my transformation here. So I have to do the, you know, just change the variable because this is on Sn. I have to change back to Rn, to Rn, because Cr is a conformal. So I get ui dx have this factor come out. So then I just put R to the end over this side. So that's what I ended up, right? So you can see this one, of course, is a fixed, right? Is a fixed number. This one is a power here. This is the power here. So as you can see, if L is small, so means if this number is big, if this number bigger than zero, we are in business, right? So it's big. So this one is big. Also, maybe I should finish over here. If my fx is big, right? If my initial data is big, you see? If I fix my R, reasonable big R, if my initial data is very big, this is also big, right? So it's guaranteed this one bigger than zero. So that means if my initial data is big for any L, if my initial data is big, so definitely we have a blow up, okay? So that's exactly what I said in net transparency. But anyway, so this one, if this is bigger than zero, so automatically we have what? We have a blow up. Okay. Also, for any big L bigger than one, any big initial data automatically is bigger than zero. So blow up actually is, as I said, it's really, really trivial. Okay. Really, really trivial for big initial data. And also, I want to make a comment over here for L less than zero. Because remember, my right hand side, I used this term. Right? This is not a very nice form. But I said, actually, look at my argument, for any non-linear term bigger than that, we always work, right? For any bigger than, look at my inequality. So especially u to the l was definitely works, okay? So we can actually get more family of the blow-up non-linear forms, okay? This one, I didn't get to the shop, remember, right? I just get to the easy theorem. So I want to try to cheat a little bit over here to some comment. So this technique also used for the quadrilinear equations, okay? So you can definitely do the same. And also, for the more complicated, you have to consider this kind of the form, okay? Choose a suitable A, B, C's, and so you can actually get to the shop, blow up, at least for the semilinear case. Okay, semilinear, this is a paper by one of my PhD students. To establish a global existence theory, of course, we all know right now must be using some of the Stierhart's type estimate in the Einstein universe. Okay, Einstein universe. Let me just quickly, my time's there not up yet, so I don't have to do that anyway. So still has time to ask, remember the equation changes to what? Changes to this form, right? Changes to this form. So when it changes to this form, so basically in order to prove the global existence, not the global existence, sorry, you just need to prove the existence up to the pi, right? Up to the pi. So you basically need this kind of estimate, okay? So sorry, this should be pi, okay? This should be pi. So need this kind of p to the alpha. So remember, this is zero at on the cone, okay? This p to the alpha on this cone. So once you have this kind of estimate for suitable alpha and beta, then you play around, so you will get a global existence for the small initial data. So that's, we know that's called the weighted Spearhouse estimate, okay? Weighted Spearhouse estimate. So this, it turns out it's true. Anyway, this is my PhD student again. So we proved for any some steps and some restrictions, you will get a Spearhouse top estimate. So the, you know, the previous speaker talked about this one. So that in this case also is kind of the manifold. As I said, the original Spearhouse estimate, you have a natural dilation argument. We don't have, definitely. And so of course we have to play around it with a little bit of the modified the Hardy Littlewell inequality and also modified some argument by the Sorge and Lindeboe. So we can actually get it. Okay, so let me go quickly. For the quadrilinear case, by the way, also you need this kind of the Spearhouse estimate. And so what we able to get is for n equal to 3, okay, a radius symmetric, but it's not sharp yet. So that means for the, so remember for the semilinear case, we have a critical power there, critical power there. We cannot get all the way there yet. So and so that's it's work is in progress. But I think we should be able to get this global existence from this picture. Okay, let me talk a little bit about the application to scattering. Application to scattering. So fortunately, yesterday Mark gave a little bit of introduction for me already. So what we do for the nonlinear wave, we can always write down this as a first order system, right? First order system by just introduce A and I just look at the vector U and UT and so on. And then, of course, for any solution V, it's given by some the nonlinear group that we call the UT. Of course, in order to solve this equation, remember we can always solve by the Duhamel principle, right? You solve this for the homogeneous equation first. That's the U0T is just the E to the TA. That's a homogeneous equation. So this is just a Duhamel principle. That's that one. So the question is, of course, I want to know whether VT look like some solution to the free equation, right? So that's what it is. That means the scattering. So it means give any initial data V0. Give any initial data V0. So the question is, I try to find the V plus or minus such that my limit will be tends to zero. So what that says, this is my solution to nonlinear equation, right? This is solution to free equation, right? This nonlinear, this is a linear equation. I want this one, find some initial data here, make this one equal to zero as t tends to positive negative infinity. Of course, you have to choose a suitable norm, make sure this is a one-to-one correspondence and a unitary and so on, okay? So then, okay, what does that mean? So you just, you know, if the U0 is unitary, right, you just put the U0T over this side, so we get a V plus or minus, this is the expression, right, this is the expression. So basically, we need to prove this one is convergent, this in some norm, convergent, okay? And also you can look at the V plus or V minus, this is a expression, this expression. So we have to prove this one definitely makes sense. So this is W plus or minus is usually called a wave operator. And this operator, V minus to V plus, is we call it scattering. So basically tells you, that remember, the V minus, you can think, is incoming from the T to the negative infinity. V plus is outgoing. So we want to find this transformation. Of course, the physicists or the people will say, that's the only thing we are interested, right? Because that's what they can see in the laboratory. They don't worry about maybe in between. They always worry about what's the incoming particle, what's the outgoing particle. And also usually it's very short time, okay? That's some particles, it's very, very fraction of a second. Okay, so what do we, in order to prove this one, so of course we need some existence of we need some mixed norm estimate, right? So basically we need to estimate that one, okay? Let me quickly give you an example. So for example, let's come back to the very simple one. It's a conformally invariant equation. So this is a, we try to find the scheduling H1 across, sorry, it should be L2. So of course we know that what the UT is, right? What the UT is in this case. That's my operator. The V, of course, is zero and U to the cubic. So let's look at this one. Remember, we have to estimate this one in H1 cross L2 norm, this one convergent, right? So how do you do that? So you just look at the first one must H1 norm, but the first one is just find TB over B, this one. But the L, H1 norm means multiply by B, right? So B, remember, is the square root of the Laplacian. So it means the sine TB. Now this one, of course, is a cosine TB, so no matter what, it's less than equal to the L2 norm. But of course, it's an L2 norm, this is a unitary. So this one, basically, this is a go away. So this becomes 6 norm. So what we need is L3, L6 norm. Right? Okay. So in general, we need some mixed norm estimate for the existence of the scattering. So usually, of course, you can establish the mixed norm estimate, usually starting from the free equation, then just hope your nonlinear equation also satisfies the same mixed norm estimate and so on. But I say, definitely sometimes it can be read directly from that condition, right? Because we have this decay effect, okay? And also, what I talked about, the Stierhaus estimate, okay? I say sometimes, because we are not, we cannot prove the full existence theory of the scattering, okay, by some other people. So this one can definitely get that one, no problem, okay, and also the power close to that, it's fine too. Okay, so, but I want to say, okay, we can actually, we don't need to, okay, we don't need to do this basically the mixed norm estimate, okay. So the another way to look at the scattering, okay, another way to look at the scattering. So remember, I want to basically give you initial data here, right? Give you initial data here. I want to find the map, basically. Give you the solution. Asymptotically, we look like the solution on the wave operator on the C plus, right? On this line. So you can think, actually you can think the W plus wave operator as a map between V0, between V0 and the V restricted on this cone. Because as T tends to infinity, as your Minkowski time tends to infinity, actually go to this cone. Okay, go to this cone. So you can think the wave operator is just the map between this one and this. Okay, so of course, the scattering operator is just the C minus and the 2C plus. So basically you need to solve what? For the scattering operator, you basically need to solve this equation. Give you data here, not the initial data, because this is what? Because the data right now is on the characteristic cone, okay? So that's what we call the Gussow problem, okay? So over here, so you basically solve this equation, okay? Sounds simple, of course. We have, you know, there's no free lunch. We have to pay for something somewhere, right? And something must be, okay, what's the something? Good thing is basically we don't need to go through the limiting procedure, right? We don't need to go through the limiting procedure. If we can solve the Gussow problem, right? If we can solve the Gussow problem. And also, by the way, from this picture, I can also easily explain why the scattering takes place only for the big exponent, right? Because remember, only big exponent you have what? On the cone, it's nice, right? It's a small exponent, and the cone is a two singular. We cannot solve. So that's why for scattering to exist, we have the big power too. Okay. Unfortunately, Gussow problem. I remember that elementary PD book usually it's one page or just mentioned. Nobody paid too much attention to it. Anyway, Gussow problem. Look at it. Actually, is non-local. Okay. Actually, has no finite propagation. Okay, has no finite propagation. Reason, anyway, maybe forget about the next one. You see anyway, so, right? Because it's a characteristic cone, okay? And also, if we want regularity, any regularity of the Gussow problem, you cannot just say give some data on the Gussow cone as smooth. It's enough. It's not. Actually, you need some kind of non-local, non-linear constraint. Okay, non-local, non-linear constraint. And so actually the Irving Siegel, John Bice, and I worked out for this conformal invariant one, because we went to the physicist in the MIT. They said, you guys must be crazy working on the, you know, the powers with, you know, the other powers, because, and this is also, they claim, you know, any physics to make sense must be Lorentz invariant, right? No matter how we look at it, in any Lorentz frame must be same. That's corresponding to that one. Okay, so we anyway worked on that one, at least. So worked out all the details for this existence. By the way, this method you can use in this basically the compactification idea. That's our original motivation. Is lots of the open problem is a constructive quantum field theory, and so Irving Siegel and I so try to make it rigorous. So. And so some, especially some non-trivial, called non-triviality, triviality theory, V3, 6, V4, 4, whatever. And so actually we can use in this Einstein universe, actually rigorous, to prove rigorously some conjectures in the non-constructive, in the constructive quantum field theory. So here, because we have some machinery, we can use the spherical harmonics, And also I want to say the Gutzhaff problem itself, even though we basically ignore it in the book, and I would argue, actually, it's a natural question. Okay, it's a natural question. Even though not much work has been done, the reason is look at the we always, you know, influenced by Kosi or whatever the initial data. Right? Initial data. Think about it. You need all the data in the space at the same time. Right? It's not reasonable. It's reasonable. We always use it. But it's not reasonable to connect to such a data anyway. But of course, what is the Gussi data? The Gussi data is just the basically connecting data on the what? On the characteristics. So basically, you can connect in the data when you go, right? When you go. So it's definitely a natural question in physics. So need some study. If we can solve the Gussi problem in this very simple diamond, so we definitely solved the scattering problem, at least for the nonlinear wave equation. Very good. I said 45 minutes. I guess I've barely made it. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.